You're listening to the Real Reading Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the 134th episode of the Real Reading Podcast with me, Tom Canning.
And me, Hugh Fault.
Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at Real Reading Pod, and you can join our Facebook group called the Real Reading Podcast Group, not the Real Reading Facebook Podcast Group. That was something else entirely. Hugh, you're back. Hello.
I am back. Yes, good to be back. It's been a long, long time.
Been about 2 months since you've graced podcast. Not that we've only had one in that time anyway, but there we go. I'll just let you know what's coming up this week. We continue with our new feature, Building a Reading Citizen. We look at the news that the Gallard Street car park is coming down, and we chat to Anne Nolan from the excellent Two Rivers Press. Before that though, Hugh, your fellow reporter Sophie Drew went to the homecoming of Olympic champion Tom Dean on Monday night. Here she is with how her experience went. Sophie Drew, welcome to the Real Reading Podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Not bad at all. I can see the sun is shining in my face on the screen, but other than that, it's all good. You've come on. We're a little bit outside of what we would normally talk about, but you've been to meet some Olympic superstars this week, Berkshire-based Olympic superstars. What did you do? What have you done?
So I was invited to a party for Tom Dean's homecoming, the legendary Tom Dean. For those of you that don't know who he is just become a double Olympic champion on his Olympic debut in Tokyo. So he won the 200 meter freestyle and one of the relays as well. So he's from Maidenhead, and I interviewed his mum a couple of weeks before I went on to the party, and she is the coolest lady ever. I'm obsessed with her. I absolutely love her. And they're just a really lovely family. So I was invited along, and it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy the way that the community kind of celebrating this achievement. It was madness. There were so many kids there, all kids that were swimmers at his club wanting to try on all the medals and things like that. And honestly, like, he lives on this big road, and he couldn't even get down the road in the car on the way back from the airport because there were so many people. He had to get out and he had to walk. Just press, everybody was there to came out to kind of celebrate what he'd achieved, because it is amazing.
It's fantastic. And did you get to meet the great man?
I did, very briefly. He was very, very busy. We got to take a selfie together.
Okay.
And I met his family more than him. So I spoke to his dad a bit, spoke to his mum a tiny bit, and then I interviewed her before as well. I spoke to his sister Nancy and his brother as well, and they were all just a lovely family. And that's what everyone had to say about them, is that, you know, they are actually just a really nice family in general. And that's always nice to hear, isn't it? Like, all the things that they were doing in the community, and also just like really humble kids. So there's five of them five children in the family. And instead of having pocket money, apparently they used to be like sent out busking because they could all play musical instruments in like Windsor and places like that. So you might have spotted Tom Dean before, just in a completely different setting, doing something completely different, which I think is quite cool.
And so were you watching when he was watching the Olympics? I must admit, I've struggled to be able to with a small child. It's made it much more difficult with it being late at night. But have you been into it?
Yes, I have. I mean, I've been following it quite a lot, mostly the Berkshire and Buckinghamshire people. But for context, I live in Buckinghamshire. so mostly kind of the home people. But yeah, I've been enjoying quite a bit of it. I've been watching a lot of stuff from the Aquatic Centre, obviously Tom Dean and then Tom Daly as well. The Toms, Tom D's are seemingly doing incredibly well. So yeah, I've been watching bits of it. But his race was incredible. So he was racing against his housemate. He goes to Bath University. Right. Sorry. Goes to Bath University. And his housemate is, I think he's about 18, and Tom Dean is 21. And they were racing against each other in the 200-meter freestyle final. And everyone kind of thought Tom Dean was going to come away with silver because Duncan had beaten him time and time again in that race, apparently. I mean, I don't follow swimming that closely, but from what I can gather, that was what was happening. And honestly, if there had been a couple more metres, maybe would have been a different result. But incredible. It was a very well-swum race. Even me, who doesn't know a huge amount about swimming, I really enjoyed watching it. I've become an expert on every sport during the Olympics. I just love it.
It's fantastic fun, isn't it? So, and Sophie, so what is your this is the first time you've been on our podcast. How long have you been working at Berkshire Live / Buckinghamshire Live?
So I started in October. So what's that?
It's nearly a year.
Let's
call it a year. Yeah.
a reasonable amount of time now, but I've never made it on the podcast.
Not for the want of trying, but you know. Okay. Sophie, thanks very much for popping on and just telling us all about your big, was it big Monday night? It was a big Monday night.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, also, all his neighbours are so friendly. Like, they're just the nicest people. I felt like I was, like, not even pressed. I was just hanging out with my mates. It was great.
It sounds like house prices down that street are going to be going through the roof as everybody wants to.
I mean, also, just a lovely location in general. So I imagine they're already quite high. Just really nice. I was blown away. I thought, I want to live here. And then I remembered, wow, it's going to be expensive.
Sophie, thanks very much.
No worries. Bye.
So Sophie seems like she had a good time. Have you spoken to Sophie about it, Hugh, at all?
Yes, she was ridiculously overexcited about the whole thing and now claims that his mother is her, quote, best friend, which I remain dubious about.
Well, we will just move on into our new feature, which is building a Reading citizen. Last week, we suggested that the first part of our constitution was having a pint of something in the Nag's Head. That was roundly voted in on Twitter. It was an overwhelming positive for that as part of our constitution. So just to explain to anybody listening for the first time, a building a Reading citizen, it is a task or a thing that someone must have completed to be considered a true citizen of Reading. We'll be asking for the public vote each week on whether the particular item becomes part of the constitution. And Hugh, you've come up with this week's, which is...
Well, I was going to say to jump off the top board at Reading Central Pool, but that's quite difficult to do now, considering it's not there anymore. So to go to the next obvious thing to do is visit Reading Abbey and Forbury Gardens. I did this the other day. Hopefully some people out there would have seen the Facebook Live video I did where I walked through one town side of town to the other, highlighting a few things that were going on. And I started in Broad Street and walked to all the way to the Banksy where I finished. And through there, while I was doing that, I went through Forbury Gardens, and which is lovely, and through the Abbey as well. And what I really liked about it was how 1 minute you're in the bustling urban place that is Reading Town Centre, and then 2 minutes later you're in this lovely park with a lovely fountain and a massive great statue of a lion and a rather sad looking mulberry tree which just fell down the other day, and then you walk through there and you're in a place that is 900 years old, and it's just kind of extraordinary change and an integral part of the town. There's loads of these information boards in the Abbey where you can learn all about it, and you can look at these incredible ruins. It doesn't take very long. I was there for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, although I was sort of walking. You can obviously stop and look around and do some photos and things like that. And it's just a really fascinating place, and it's been preserved incredibly well. And then if you want to take in another one of Reading sites, it's just down the road from the Banksy, which is also very interesting. So it's a really, if you've never been, you should definitely go and take in a place which has got a really extraordinary history about it. Over the course of 900 years, quite a few things have happened, including heavily involving Henry VIII. And it's really worth going to look at and see if you're interested in the town and what was there before 900 years ago. 900 years, that's a very long time.
It is, it is. Thanks very much, Hugh. We'll pop this as a vote on our Facebook group this week as to whether you think that a visit to Reading Abbey should be part of our Building a Reading Citizen Constitution. If you've got any ideas that should be considered or you just want to add your thoughts, here is Jeremy with how you can get in touch with us.
Get in touch with the team. Email hello@realreadingpodcast.co.uk. Find us on Twitter and Instagram @RealReadingPod, and join our Facebook group by searching Real Reading Podcast.
Thanks very much, Jeremy. Welcome to part two, headline focus this week, which coincidentally is with you, Hugh Fort. Our big headline focus, and it's possibly actually from last week more, but it's a story that I'm invested in because I hate this place. It's the Gower Street car park, which I think is probably one of the most expensive, and the lawyers might get on to me about that, but it's also smells dreadful. It's just a horrible place to have to go and park your car. You'd be much better off going and parking in Reading Station car park the other side, or in fact any other car park anywhere in the world than Garrard Street car park. It's awful, and I am delighted that it's coming down. Hugh Fort, tell me all about it.
Yes, it's not a thing of physical beauty, is it?
No, it's really not.
A throwback to the time where architecture was not at its peak, shall we say. I'm not quite sure when it was built, but it's big and ugly, and you're right, it does smell. It's coming down. From Monday, work will take place to demolish it, which will see the end of this very large, and you're right, very expensive. I think last time I looked at the cost of parking there, it's something like £18 a day, which is quite a lot considering what the facility is and what it offers, which is an unpleasant smell. It's going, and it's going as part of the Station Hill development. So across the road from there is the site for phase one of Station Hill, which used to be the old Friars Walk and Telecoms House. They're now gone. They were demolished last year. And work has started on the first phase of that, which will see hundreds and hundreds. I think it's more than 600 houses, offices, and various other things being put on that side of the road. So over the course of the next few months, the car park will be removed. This is the second phase of Station Hill, which I'm not quite sure when work will start on that. I don't think that's been released yet. I don't know if they would want to finish the first stage or get the first stage well underway before they start the second stage. But this is something called One Station Hill, which is an office building, which there's another 600 odd homes proposed for this area, and possibly a 200 bedroom hotel as well.
Okay.
So if you imagine what that area looks like now, it's kind of, the whole area is kind of a bit grotty and full of old. There's another old office building down at the bottom on Greyfriars Road, which is also eventually going to go. And that whole area is going to be replaced by a big shiny new housing offices, and potentially this hotel as well. So it's a complete change to what was there before. So it's almost like it's such a change you can't really imagine what it's going to look like without really, once the building starts to progress and you can see how it's going to look, you'll be able to get some idea of what the area will be like, probably in about 10 years, I guess, maybe a bit less than that now. But it's, like I say, it's certainly a very run, it was even more so with that derelict shopping mall. I don't think any town centre really wants to highlight a derelict shopping mall. So that's gone. And yes, it's been replaced by thousands, more than 1,000 houses. Apartments more than houses as such, flats, you know, the F word in everyone in Reading hates. So Garrard Street will be no more. The project across the road will continue over the next year or so. Longer than that, in fact, because it will just carry on until it's finished, essentially. I don't know how long that's going to be. But yeah, we'll see the car park removed. And whether phase two starts and whether they move on to, once the car park is done, they move on to demolishing the other buildings towards the other end of the site as well, which sort of makes sense, I guess, to clear the site completely. So it's ready to develop. We'll have to see. But yeah, Garrard Street will be no more. It is already closed and has been for a few months. So don't try and park there on Monday. It's my strong advice. And yeah, it'll be pulled down. There'll be a major sort of demolition job going on in the town for the next few months. And I know from experience of having my desk directly opposite the first site, watching things get pulled down is quite fascinating. So we'll be keeping a close eye on what's happening over the next few months.
Hugh, thanks very much. Comprehensive as usual. It's a funny one because do you remember like the previous Station Hill buildings that were in front of the car park were particularly horrible as well. There was the famous bingo hall where,
and the bus was in the bus station, yeah,
and where several royals went, I think, to the was it Top Rank, was that what it was, something like that?
Top Rank was down there, yeah. And the big the Western Tower was there, wasn't it?
Yes.
Years and years ago. Those buildings have all been gone for ages, haven't they?
You forget. But it was, and what I never realised back in the old days when I used to come into Reading for a sort of a night out was that when you were getting the bus outside the station, you were actually just suspended in midair. It was all kind of lifted up. It was very odd when they did all of that, and suddenly you realised
it was very odd.
It wasn't ground level.
It wasn't ground level, and it was a lot of those. I'm sure a lot of those buildings were removed for a different Station Hill development, which never happened.
Yes.
So I'm sure the developer in charge of Station Hill now is very grateful for that. but we'll have to see. There's also the health and safety investigation as well over the collapse, the scaffold collapse, which is more than 2 years ago now. It was on August the 1st, 2018. And there's still an investigation going on into that. So we'll have to see what happens there. Health and safety investigations are notoriously long. So I ask every few months and they come back to me and say, yep, still going on. And that's all we get. So who knows when that will be released. But yeah, a lot happening in Station Hill. And actually, I think it's one of those parts of town that people, despite constantly moaning about housing and flats and stuff like that, would probably say that having something of that nature there is better than a derelict shopping mall and a load of empty old-fashioned offices and that car park. So let's see how it goes.
Hugh, thanks very much. That is it for part two in part three, we will be talking to Anne Nolan of Two Rivers Press.
The Big Interview.
Hi, everybody. I'm here with Anne Nolan from Two Rivers Press. Hello, Anne.
Hi, Tom. Lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
That's all right. We've been trying to organise this one for a little while. I'm absolutely enthralled by Two Rivers Press. You are Reading's own publisher. Is that right?
Yes. We've been based in Reading since 1994. We were founded by a guy who is an artist called Peter Hay. And so we've been publishing since then. We've done 160 books altogether now, I think.
Wow. I know Hugh Fort, who is on our podcast, is a big fan of your books.
Yes.
They offer loads of really great local information. And you're regularly referenced. I think perhaps we don't necessarily say it's a Two Rivers Press book often enough, but you're regularly referenced and information from your books is regularly referenced on the podcast and on the Berkshire website. How does that obviously doesn't necessarily generate you any funds, I suppose, but how does it feel to be kind of the backbone of knowledge, I would say?
Oh, it's really great. And I mean, from a personal point of view, I've been with the press 5 years and I've learned so much about Reading just working with the press, reading the backlist books and talking to local authors. There's so many people in Reading who know so much, and it's really great.
There's some really, really brilliant looking titles in there, particularly the one I have my eye on is When Reading Really Rocked. Is there any that you are really keen on? What's your favourite? Let's start there. What's your favourite book? If you could, I guess picking a favourite child, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I do actually really like When Reading Really Rocked. That was one I worked closely on. It's written by a couple of guys who work at the Sound Machine vinyl record shop in the Harris Arcade. And so, you know, they really know their stuff and they talk to people all the time who have reminiscences about local bands from, I should probably say, When Reading Really Rocked is the live music scene in Reading from 1966 to 1976.
Yes.
So it's kind of looking back at a particular era when music really became mainstream.
And it's not just books about Reading, though, is it? There's more to Two Rivers Press than just Reading. What other sorts of books can people would people be interested in, do you think?
Yeah, we publish around 10 books a year, and that's generally six of those might be poetry. We do quite a few poetry books. We do maybe one or two local interest books a year, and then we also do some art books, and the art books have a nature focus, really. We have a botanical art series, and in fact our best-selling book is one called Botanical Artistry, which is by Julia Trickey, and she teaches botanical art, and that book has just done really well for us.
Wow, it's quite like I don't really know what to expect, kind of, and I don't really want to get into the finances of any situation, but what sort of is it a good business to be in? And I suppose I want to say local press, but I don't think I mean local press. Is it sort of a?
Yes, you won't get rich.
No. It's a calling more than anything.
Yeah, we do it because we love it, really. We don't pay ourselves a huge amount, but we do tick over and we make enough money. The thing about publishing is you have to make enough money from the books you publish in order to be able to afford to publish the next book. So it's all about keeping cash flow going, really. So if you have a handful of titles that suddenly do really well, that's really helpful. And we have received also over the years, we do sometimes get grants to help us publish books, especially if they've got colour illustrations. We had a grant to help towards the Bricks and Brickwork in Reading book, for example, because that had a lot of illustrations in it.
So, and how do you decide what you're going to publish? How do people pitch to you? If me, Tom Canning, I've got an idea for a book, would I come and pitch it to you?
Yes, I mean, generally people do come to us with ideas. For the poetry books, we have a poetry editor, so he is in charge of, mm-hmm. of choosing which poetry books we publish. On a local books level, we generally discuss ideas amongst ourselves, and we tend to try and avoid the detailed historical books because they're quite specialist. We try and publish books which we think will have a more broad general interest. So, for example, W.H. Smith's has quite a range of our books on display. So I always think, would somebody who goes into W.H. Smith to queue for the post office, will they pick up this book on the shelf and find it interesting?
And I guess that's so sort of being in somewhere like W.H. Smith is quite a coup, really, for a local publisher. Is that fair?
Yes, I mean, it's great for us. I mean, it's quite unusual because I think the Reading branch of Smith's has a very big book department, and that's actually quite unusual for Smith's. Most Smith's don't do that and they don't take local books, but ours does. And during lockdown, they remained open because they had the post office, and they've got the local history books, they've put them face out right by the post office queue. So that's been great.
So just you just kind of bring up the lockdown there. How has the pandemic been for the press? I mean, I presume people like TV were picking up more books, I would guess.
I mean, the first 2 or 3 months were bad. You know, printers were not necessarily open. The book distributors had a dodgy couple of weeks. The post wasn't even being delivered for a while. But then, yes, people started to want to read more books. And also people want to support small local independent businesses and publishers. So we've had a lot more orders through our website, which is really great. I think people are not order through Amazon, they're trying to support their local publishers, booksellers, etc., etc. So yes, our web sales are doing really well, and we had a good year in the end.
Oh, fantastic. That's good news. And I suppose I can't really talk to you about people who submit books to you and stuff like that without kind of asking, like, is there one that got away that maybe you thought, oh, that's not going to do anything? Is there one that maybe went somewhere else and went, like, you know, I'm not necessarily talking your Harry Potter or anything like that, but is there one that maybe got away from you?
I was talking to our book designer last week, and she sometimes does book design for people who self-publish. So sometimes if we don't take a book on, she will kind of produce it on somebody else's behalf. And one of the people she worked with, whose book we didn't do, apparently they've sold 700 copies of their book. So anyway, it's really hard to know in advance. But we have to try and we can't just publish anything. We have to sort of stick to certain topics and themes in order for our list to make sense as a whole. So if it's not local interest or one of our art subject areas or poetry, then it's difficult for us to take on.
So is that what would you say to anybody that was kind of thinking about putting a proposal into you? What would you be, is that what you, those the things you're looking for? Is there anything specific, or what would catch your eye, like almost like right now?
I think the author has to have thought about what is actually interesting to other people about their books. I think a lot of people write what's interesting to them, but they don't necessarily pick out what other people are going to find interesting about the books. So I always find it's useful to ask authors to try and write some selling points, or to write 150 words about the book, because that forces you to think about what is it about the book that's going to grab somebody's attention. Because in a bookshop, people are just going to pick up, read the blurb, and they're either interested or not. So you've got a small, you'll know this from local media. You know,
I was going to say, it sounds exactly like publishing a local news website, really. It sounds exactly like that. just to finish off, Anne, I know you mentioned, and this had come up on the emails that we'd exchanged previously, you mentioned an in-house book designer or artist. What does she do aside from designing book covers and stuff like that? But you know, they say don't judge a book by its cover. How does that sort of fit in with everything, because you do, I think, ultimately, you do judge a book by its cover.
I mean, we were founded by an artist, so we've always had that kind of aspect to our work. And we have a couple of local artists who work on a lot of our book cover designs for us, Sally Castle and Martin Andrews. And Nadia has been the book designer for the press for many years. So she does the layout of the books, but also uses the artwork to create book covers. And, you know, the design of our books is very important to us. We're very proud of the look and feel of our books. I think it distinguishes us from a lot of other small local publishers who often don't have professional designers working on their covers.
Because they are very standout. They are very you know you're looking at a Two Rivers Press book when you can see the covers and what's going on. So that's really good. So how would people find out about Two Rivers Press? How do they get in touch with you, Anne?
Website is the best place to look. tworiverspress.com. If you want to see the books in the wild, say Risk has most of our books. W.H. Smith's Museum and Four Bears Bookshop in Caversham. But the website. Place to go, and we love to get website orders, and we hope there's something that people will be interested in.
Fantastic, Anne, thank you very much for joining me today. That's lovely.
Thank you very much, Tom.
The big interview.
I very much enjoyed talking to Anne. Two Rivers Press, I think, are one of those, I think I said in the interview here, they kind of underpin a lot of the facts and information that we know about Reading, a lot of the stuff.
They do. I've got loads of their books. Mm. They're great for reference and information and picking out quirky little things about the town. Long may it continue.
It sounds like they're going from strength to strength, and Anne did say they've got a few projects in being lined up as well, which are quite exciting. One thing I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention was we talked about When Reading Rocked, the book by the guys from the Sound Machine in Harris Arcade that is published by Two Rivers Press. Anne mentioned to me there's actually a YouTube playlist as well, which is well worth checking out. I'll put that in the show notes, which you'll be able to access on your whatever your podcasting app device is. There'll be a link in there to a YouTube playlist. So thanks very much for that, Hugh. Thank you for your time. Here's Jeremy with how you can get in touch with us if you want to have a chat.
Get in touch with the team. Email hello@realreadingpodcast.co.uk. Find us on Twitter and Instagram @RealReadingPod, and join our Facebook group by searching Real Reading Podcast.
That's quite enough for this week. We'll be back next week with plenty more. You never know. We might have Rach and Hugh and Paul. You never know. All in the same place. That would be
the dream.
Yes. Obviously, we're still looking for people to speak to, so do let us know if there's someone you think would be good to chat to. And if you have a moment, please give us a rating and a review on your podcast app. We'll be back next week for more Reading podcast goodness. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Real Reading Podcast.